Blog Talk Radio.
There's something happening here, but what it is ain't exactly clear. There's a man with a gun over there, telling me I got to beware. I think it's time we stop. Children, what's that sound? Everybody look what's going down. There's battle lines being drawn. Nobody's right if everybody's wrong. Young people speak in their minds, are getting so much resistance from behind. Time we stop, hey, what's that sound? Everybody look what's going down. What a field day for the heat. Thousand people in the street, singing songs and a carrying sign, mostly say hooray for our side. It's time we stop, hey, what's that sound? Everybody look what's going down. Your life, it will creep. It starts when you're always afraid. Step out of line, the man come and take you away. We better stop, hey, what's that sound? Everybody look what's going on. Stop, hey, what's that sound? Everybody look what's going on. We better stop now, what's that sound? Everybody look what's going on.
And good evening, everybody, and welcome to the latest edition of U of Tretomy Radio. Tonight's show is Time for a Plan, Part 7 with Gary Hunt. And I want to welcome everybody into the show tonight. If you're new to the show, welcome aboard. This show is going to be all about a plan based upon, I'll let Gary go into that because he's got a little disclaimer he likes to do at the beginning of each show. So with that being said, if you have any questions or anything, and you want to call in and ask your questions, the call-in number is 646-716-4518. You can also get in on Skype. If you add me to your Skype, Randy_Mac, and then text in that you have a question, I'll bring you into the chat with Gary and myself, and you can bring your questions on air. So with that being said, welcome to the show, Gary. How are you tonight?
Just fine. And let's see. I've talked to a few people have suggested that we should rename the program. We're not going to, but since I use the phrase fairly often, they thought that the more appropriate phrase would be putting fear of God and the people into the government, which might be appropriate. But the disclaimer, I understand where this came from, that a while back I was asked a question, and this, you know, 20 years in the Patriot community, the militias are talking about armed confrontation. It's going to come. They're going to come and get our guns and everything. But never have I seen a plan that where we took the initiative. And, well, how do you do that? You just mass some 10,000 militia troops and take them on. So the question was asked to me, can we possibly take on the government with technology, their massive manpower and equipment and everything? And at first, it seemed rather daunting. And then I thought about it and realized, you know, there's probably some directions back there. And I started going back and looking at history. And I saw that back then, the Patriots actually took the initiative, whether it be the Boston Tea Party, tarring and feathering, tearing down houses, warehouses, and customs houses, resulting in death sometimes of people, and realized that there is a map there, and I began looking at that map a little more critically, and if we adapt that to the playing field we have today, I think that there is an answer to that question, that we can prepare a plan that gives a general guideline to how we can pursue this. Not everything's necessarily in the proper order. Some places would move faster, some slower. But the fact is, if we have a plan, and that plan is constantly escalating, if that plan minimizes the amount of bloodshed, every effort is made to minimize the amount of bloodshed, and every bit of the effort is directed at putting the fear of God and the people into those in government in power, that we might force a rather peaceful transition. We might see Tories fleeing to England or Canada. I hate to put it that way with Randy up in Canada, but it's possible that we could put the fear of God and the people back in the government so that they know who's boss, and it's not going to come from a polling place. It's not going to come from a jury box. So anyway, what we've talked about so far in this entire program is based on a theoretical answer to that question. This is theoretical. This is not an action plan. If you go out and pursue this action plan on your own, you do it at your own risk. But then there will be risk to restoring constitutional government. So some of you might see the desire to go out and begin initiating this
plan. You bring up a point that I'd like to reiterate that Joseph Martino brought about on the show. When we interviewed him about his book, Resistance to Tyranny, which, by the way, you can find the link up at the top right-hand corner of the website on You Have Tread on Me, Resistance to Tyranny. It's all about his book. He brought about that at first, anytime that you see tyranny rising up in any country, in any country in the world, if you feel that your country is turning tyrannical, in order to begin moving to combat that tyranny, you must have a plan. You must have a plan with clear, actionable and achievable goals that are measurable, that you can say, okay, we've achieved this goal, now onto the next goal. And that's something we don't have. We have a bunch of people out there who have good ideas and good intentions, but nobody is really looking back to the founding fathers, for instance, let's say in the U.S., looking back to the founding fathers and what they did, you know, all the steps required in their plan. You know, so I would encourage...
He also pointed out the necessity of being able to judge when it's time to move too.
When is important as well. If you don't know when, it could be too late. You know, when all of your freedoms and liberties are gone, like Joe said, it's too late. When you've been de-armed, it's too late. When you have no voice to speak out and no way to combat it, it's too late. So the time to do it is before it gets to that point, but that, again, that's a touchy subject, you know. Look at the people in Taiwan. They rose up, you know, with slingshots and wrist rockets because they were disarmed. And it didn't go too well.
So if we want to make it happen, we can't look to somebody else to make it happen for us. Okay, now, the first part of the plan was based on a few people, not acting in the capacity of Committee of Safety or militia. Make that perfectly clear. This is not an official action of the Committees of Safety or of the militia. It doesn't mean that a militia member not operating in the capacity of an active militia member or a member of the Committee of Safety not acting in the capacity of a member of the Committee of Safety can't go out and do something. They can on their own. We're not like the U.S. military where you can't talk to the press and things like that. So I'm going to post a link real quick, too. And it was an article I wrote called Finding Freedom Again, and it might give you an idea of how much we have lost. Now, I've only addressed in that article things that have occurred in my lifetime for the most part or that I'm familiar with. There are a lot more freedoms that have been lost than are indicated on there, but it's a rather interesting article because you'll see that the creepy crawly that has been taking away our rights has taken away a lot more than we realize. If it happened over a period of 5 years, we would have noticed it. And we've all watched a baby grow, If you come back every couple of months, the baby grows quite a bit every time you come back. But if you live with the baby while it's growing, you don't really notice those changes until you sit back somewhere along the line and say, damn, he's a teenager now. When it comes in slow increments, and that was what Joe was talking about, when it comes in slow increments, and it's happened in many of the countries that Randy and Joe were talking about on the program, that you don't really notice it. When is the time that you put your foot down and say, that's enough? That time may be here now to some people. Now, if this plan starts working, if people started pursuing this plan, that would be a sign to others that, hey, we're further along than I thought we were. Maybe it's time for me to start doing something, too. So it begins to escalate once it begins. So the first step was these people working outside of any official capacity in the militia or the committees of safety, or people that had no relation with them, identifying targets and going out and dealing with those targets. It makes them judge, jury, and executioner, like those people that tarred and feathered people back in Boston, New York, and other places around the country back then. Many of the people tarred and feathered died. Painful, too, because their skin would come off. They would lose fluid. They didn't treat burns as well back then as we do now. They would be losing body fluid. They'd dehydrate, and they'd die painfully, unlike lead poisoning in the middle of the night. So, hey, we could be more humane now than they were back then. But to think that this will occur without bloodshed, it's too late. There's been bloodshed, mostly on our side. However, this first step is little independent security teams or leaderless resistance cells going out and taking some action cautiously, occasionally. Don't do it every weekend. Be very careful of, be very wary of roadside cameras. Put a false license plate on your car. Do whatever you necessary to cover it up. Go out and do something. Then wait a month or two. Go out and do something again. But if we've got enough people doing this, we might have events every week. Now, then the public relations comes in and starts, I don't want to say spinning the story, but they start explaining, well, there's a reason this happened. And hopefully the press will pick up on it's not just the government story. And they've been known to in the past. I've seen it happen. I've helped it happen. The next step, then, is when those small groups reach out and start working with other groups and start coming up with bigger and better ideas, a little more aggression, a little expansion. But this gets the idea going that we're going to start with small groups and then start growing. But committees of safety and militia still aren't in the picture, except, think back, Boston Tea Party. All these Indians went down to work and dumped tea, destroyed property. The tarring and feathering that went on in, all around or numerous places around the country. There were never any witnesses to those crimes, and had there been, the jury surely would not have convicted them. So, obviously, the committees of safety and the militia were doing all they could to protect these people, and I'd like to think the militia and committee of safety would protect people so long as there was not an indictment issued by a grand jury in accordance with Article 5 of the Bill of Rights. Otherwise, protect those people, because the government has no authority to take them to trial. Shall not be held to answer for any felony or infamous crime unless under presentment or indictment by a grand jury. Grand juries are made of the people. So the police can't just say, I'm going to arrest you. And John Bad Elk, a case in 1890, bears this out. They have to have the warrant issued by the grand jury to arrest these people. So the militia and the committees, the only thing you're doing at this time is observing, that making sure that their people, the people in their community, are not treated with total disregard for the Constitution by being arbitrarily arrested on the whim of one or two people. Third level now is when the committees of safety and militia start acting in a little more aggressive capacity. They start looking around, talking to local police department, fire department, hospitals, and perhaps if people get scared and run, begin to involve themselves in taking over and making sure that communication, health facilities, city governments, repair of bridges, water, sewer, keep functioning. And so now we've got a role for the militia, a passive one, really, a totally, at this point, totally defensive, unless Well, it's totally defensive because any fighting would be a consequence of defending people. But you've got the committee and the militia beginning to get involved in the activity that's going on. So then we come to part number four. This is called coordinated efforts, securing facilities, allegiances, and prisoners. Overview. Firmly established in small pockets, primarily in rural locations, it's time to begin breaking out with aggressive actions to expand the areas controlled by the constitutional forces. The first consideration should probably be sabotage. Now, that's the link that I posted earlier. Sabotage is disruptive, generates fear, and has a negative impact on the supplies and manpower of the rebels. Now, remember, the rebels in this case are those that have rebelled against the Constitution, even though they have sit in the seat of government. They are the rebels to the Constitution. So the rebels in this scenario is always the people currently in power that have a total disregard or disdain for the Constitution. Now, targets should be selected for a maximum impact on the rebel forces and facilities with a minimum impact on civilians wherever possible. If power, communications, or other utilities are to be targeted, they should be targeted at locations that will be close to the targeted rebel facilities or function, and thereby protecting as much as possible the civilian infrastructure. Convoys and supply transportation facilities provide dual benefits. They deprive the rebels of supplies while supplementing constitutional force supplies, often providing equipment and materials that might otherwise not be available to those forces. National Guard armories and reserve unit training facilities are ideal targets. Personnel within these facilities might be enlisted against the rebels, while supplies, materials, munitions, transportation, and communication equipment, and a facility from which to conduct operations is a result of such action. The more facilities that are taken, the more difficult the rebels' ability to attempt to recover what was lost becomes. It does spread the constitutional forces out, so plans should be made to assure that reserve capabilities are maintained to support against such efforts by counterattacks by the rebels. So we've begun stretching out, and wherever peacefully it can be obtained to bring these into our purview, but where a little effort, you've got sufficient force to take over a facility, take it over. Now, the historical perspective on this, the first historical instances of cooperation between various committees and militia occurred on April 19th as militia, at the direction of their respective committees and individuals concerned with what was happening, secured all but the shipping lanes to Boston and the harbor. Artemus Ward was appointed General of the Army of Observation encircling Boston. He was displaced later when George Washington was appointed General of the Army by the Continental Congress. This transition of authority and responsibility was directed by the civil authority in both assignments. It was a consolidation of forces in both cases. In the South, many local militia joined with other units to mount actions against royal forces and or Tories. The Battle of Kings Mountain stands out as a very successful assault conducted by forces from various militia units consolidated under a single command, which resulted in the defeat and capture of a significant loyalist force. Courts were established by committees of safety to deal with crimes and Tories. Civil matters were left unattended for the duration of the war. Many people in positions of authority or who had been questioned regarding their allegiances were required during the war to take a loyalty oath. One such oath ended with the following phrase, quote, "If I betray this oath, I agree to suffer the punishment of a traitor," end quote. So if you develop a loyalty oath for people to take, hey, keep in mind that phrase is there. They have acknowledged their guilt if they betrayed the oath. What more could you ask for? That's a confession before the fact. But that the idea of parole and loyalty oaths was, the honor of men was much greater back then than it is now. But I think that we need to take the approach that unless somebody proves that he does not warrant honor, that he should be allowed honor. And if he takes the oath, that we should recognize that he's taken it in good faith, unless he disproves himself. And if he does, and he's a traitor, hey, what are the consequences for traitor? It would demonstrate that we're working as honorable men with integrity. The government doesn't do that. You're not even under arrest and they slap the handcuffs on you and throw you in the car and lock the door. They have no respect for us. I mean, I don't know how, you know, I've been arrested a few times, I'll admit that. And at one point, when you know you're going to get arrested, why be handcuffed? Hell, I'll be glad to get in the back of the car. I know you're going to take me away. I know you've got the guns. I know there's five of you here. Just put me in the car. Don't make me sit against my hands and get my wrists all messed up. But there's no respect for us. But they're supposed to be working for us. So we can show a higher level of integrity if we get involved in these situations by recognizing that people are capable of holding up their hand and swearing to something and holding to that oath that they took, not the people in Congress, the people on the streets, perhaps. So the role of the committee. Committee should have recruited many new members by now. Administrative responsibilities become greater and the need to join with other committees, county committee of safety, and more importantly, a state committee of safety. Delegates will be sent from the lower tier committees to the next level county. Each county then would provide delegates to the state committee of safety. So as you expand out and become secure in an area, then you get with others that are secure in their areas and start working collectively to act for your county and then eventually act for your state and increase the communications. Now, imagine a cancer across the whole country, and these little anti-cancer cells pop up all over the country. Some are very far from any others. Some are close to others. So as these little anti-cancer cells grow, the white ones, and they contact each other, they start ballooning out. And that's the whole idea, that we start expanding in little groups until they interconnect, and then we've got a larger group. They'll bring in some more, just like what drops of water collecting together and becoming a rivulet. The white starts growing and growing, and eventually the black is left in Washington, D.C. only. So the loyalty oath should be developed and records kept of who has taken them. And any person in a position of authority or who has had to had his loyalty questioned and is to be continued in any capacity should be required to take said oath. Now, if you go into a hospital and you've got people that you just have doubts about, doctors, nurses, what do they call those people with empty bed cans? All these people, you know, if people seem to have an attitude, you get them to take a loyalty oath and advise them that violation of this oath is going to have its consequences. You find the police department in a small town. Hey, we're with you. We believe in the Second Amendment. We believe in the Constitution. We'll join you. Each of them should take a loyalty oath. And then if you're going to work with them, you need to spread them out. Spread them out amongst the militia. Not put them all in one place, because if they're all in one place, they might decide they don't like the decision they made. But if they're spread out amongst you, they're going to learn as they go. They'll be an asset as they participate. And so these loyalty oaths, in conjunction with having faith in people, allow us to kind of integrate into the existing system very comfortably wherever possible. Coordination of efforts, decisions requiring entire state cooperation or action, and communication with other state committees of safety are in order. Each requires greater commitment from all members based on the increased responsibility. So as the committee is growing and encompassing more areas, they assume the responsibility of, I don't want to say local law enforcement, but justice of the peace, dealing with criminal elements, keeping the sewer and water facilities open, the roads open, communication, transportation, stormwater systems, hospitals, grocery stores, food transportation facilities. As the committee grows, it has to absorb the responsibility. In many cases, they may have to do nothing except know who the people are that are running it and stay in touch with them, offer them. If you need any help, we've got manpower. We'll be glad to assist you any way we can. But to start getting involved in the administration of these functions that are necessary for people's daily lives. Now, when people look around and say, well, you know, all these facilities are still open and the Committee of Safety and the militia have taken over our town. In fact, it seems to be running better than it used to be. Hey, I like these guys. Now, when we talk about hearts and minds in Vietnam or in Afghanistan and Iraq, we were very much a failure at that. But they're different cultures. But here, hearts and minds becomes very important. They are us, and we are they. And we have to treat them as us, and they have to treat us as we. And so if we work together, we can bring them on board with very little effort. There's no language problems. There's no culture problems. There's strictly a recognition of, is the government looking out for my protection? And when they see that, yeah, they might think it's a good idea after all. Hey, they might pick up a rifle for the first time. Who knows? General direction and policy, as well as military objectives for the militia, should be provided on a daily basis. Now, this is Committee of Safety now is staying in touch with their militia, making sure that we've got good, we're leaving to the command structure the details of the activity, but as far as where they're needed, the Committee of Safety has to direct them. As militia units join within command structures, commissioning for higher rank officers consistent with the size of the command must be accomplished. Supplies and compensation for active militia service has to be provided for. Compensation, oh, we'll pay them, just like they did back in the Revolutionary period. But at this point, when militia are coming up with active duties, they need to be paid. They're going to be away from home. They're going to have to provide for their families. So some means has to be provided to pay for this service. Logistics warrant special consideration, for much can be lost if the militia are not always properly provided for. We don't want to lose the militia. We don't want bloodshed on our side if at all possible. That means the militia has to have the best of what you can provide for them, and there should be an effort to provide for them the best that you possibly can so that they're protected and able to fight another day if necessary. As this stage is entered, the probability of general or near battlefield engagements is heightened. Integration of local and county units into the state coordination must be as seamless as possible to minimize confusion, disorientation, discipline, and overcoming reluctance towards the new command structure. Now, it's on the Committee of Safety to make sure that this goes on in a very productive manner, that people accept the new command structure as it is created. That doesn't mean that your captain or your major from your unit is going to be displaced, but it means unless he's proven himself better than the other guy, he might not be the colonel. The committees of safety will have to work out the command structure at that level because the Committee of Safety is the one that issues commissions for officers. Arrangements should be made for cooperative existing press writing distribution and syndication. Now, that means that the Committee of Safety has to start really concerning itself with press and communications. Now, you have to pardon my grammar on these. These were quickly written, and I'm cleaning them up after the program. But in the public relations realm, I got to take a breath a minute. Randy, talk for
it. Oh, not a problem. You know, you bring up some good points here, Gary, and there's a couple of other things I wanted to mention as well, or that I wanted to reiterate as well. Public support is key and vital here, and Gary has brought that point up many times, in fact. You know, Joe Martino even brings about that one point. If we take a look at Gandhi's revolution in India, you know, we see that they had the public support, and they were dealing with a much different creature. They were dealing with the British Empire. So public support worked for them. They didn't have any arms that they could you know, grab and go with. They dealt with the only thing they could do, which was their own personal bodies, and they garnered public support. Yet, you have to know who your enemy is and who you're fighting and what kind of tyranny you're under. If Gandhi had tried to do that exact same thing with Hitler or with Stalin, wow, that would have been a much different picture. So you have to understand who your enemy is and garner public support to fit your tactics. I mean, if public support is disseminating information or gathering information in retreat and sending that information to, you know, to those who are fighting for their freedom and liberty, then that's the kind of support you need. If it's food and weapons, then that's what you need as well. But public support should always be the primary goal, no matter what you're doing, because without that, the second you get the people turning against you, it's done. You're over. Your little fight for freedom is done.
Now, let me point out, too, that the British Army in India was more likely to show constraint in using violence against activity than the police departments in this country have demonstrated. We've got a lot of situations in this country where the police department is shot and killed people. The British Army, just like with the Boston Massacre, they could not take action unless it was absolute self-defense. And so we're dealing with some elements that might be tending towards what Stalin would have done. Not as brutal or abusive, just kill everybody, but the fact that they're going to be more aggressive because they've been trained to be more aggressive is something you need to realize. But then that can work in our behalf because as people see that we are the good guys, things might work out better for us. So now we'll move on to public relations. Public relations moves into the mainstream. Now it must act as the primary source of information for the contained communities. It will be assuming the role of the mainstream media, including written press, radio, television, and other necessary forms of communication. The enlistment of additional manpower knowledgeable in the various capacities should be a high priority. Well, back to what we just talked about. We start going out and talking to people in the local TV stations, local radio stations, say, hey, we're going to get our Constitution back. You're going to join us? And if they're willing, yes, you've got people already trained. If not, you have to find people trained. Communication is very important. Some might call it propaganda because of that. But the fact is, the news that we have cannot be undermined or spun into something bad by the other side. They will control the media that they control as they control it now, and we will have to at least impose some degree of control as we acquire secure areas where transmitting or publishing facilities are available for this type of press. More extensive news stories regarding the expansion of the held areas, successes of operations, civil activity. Now let people know we've got the town back in order and it's functioning better than ever. And generally, as much as possible, information is as to the conduct and activities of the committee or constitutional forces should be provided to the public. Militia duties. Militia units should be expected to be integrated into new command structures as units are joined together for battalions, regiments, brigades. In resistance areas commanded by rebel forces, significant battles may ensue. The small unit identity will begin to become absorbed into larger, more formal military units. Now, then I've got a table here that gives you an idea. I'm sure that in most cases people would be aware of this, but just for the sake of information so it's readily available, this is common rank of officers and size of militia units. Now, understand the size of the units varies depending on the type of unit it is, but a squad is 8 to 16 men and is usually commanded by a corporal or a sergeant. A platoon is 25 to 60 men and is usually commanded by a lieutenant and a staff sergeant. A company is 70 to 250 men and is commanded by a captain and a first sergeant. A battalion is 300 to 1,000 men and is commanded by a major and a sergeant major. A regiment is 2,000 to 3,000 men and is commanded by a colonel and his staff. A brigade is 4,000 to 5,000 and is commanded by a brigadier general and staff. A division is 10,000 to 20,000 and is commanded by a major general and staff. A corps is 30 to 80,000, is commanded by a lieutenant colonel and staff, and an army is 60 to 100,000 men, is commanded by a general and a staff. So that's a general guideline. I mean, each state is going to have to determine how it's going to do it. You'll probably be running the smaller numbers for command units because of the availability of manpower, but that structure needs to begin forming itself because as the constitutional forces expand, we can expect that the rebel forces are also going to concentrate. And so that every step, the possibility of a confrontation is larger and larger. Now, if they look at us and they see that we've got a division, we've got 10,000 to 20,000 men ready to take them in, they've got the local sheriff, local police, some of the National Guard, U.S. Marshals, FBI, and maybe even a few Army military personnel, and they see that on the other side of the fence is 10 to 20,000 people, they might have second thoughts. So the importance of getting this structure in place to the number of people that we've got in our force, effective force, is demonstrable, is to our advantage. It's just like a conversation I had on a chat earlier today. about guns and planes. Somebody was talking about box openers in planes. Well, if somebody had guns on the planes, the guys with the box openers wouldn't stand a chance. They wouldn't even pull their box cutters out. But then he said, well, you're going to have a shootout on a plane? And no, most of the effect of private firearms in deterring crime is as a deterrent. Somebody, after that conversation, somebody told me that they thought that about 95% of the known situations where crime was discouraged by the display of the firearm resulted from not using the firearm, and only 5% were a consequence of using that firearm. So on the airplane, you got a bunch of guys with box cutters. So one guy comes up with a gun, and all the box cutters fall to the floor, and the guys go back to their seats. And by having an organized militia, we're in a position to have the gun against the box cutter or a bigger gun against the smaller guy. I don't know if the government could muster 10 or 20,000 that quickly, because there's going to be a lot of contention within their ranks, especially the people that have signed up as oath keepers and swore to uphold and defend the Constitution. They're going to have a hell of a time, and when they see our side is functioning, they might decide that they're wearing the wrong uniform. And so this is that expansion. The white dots get larger. The white spots get larger. Additional duties such as garrison guard and other appropriate functions will become increasingly necessary. Logistics will become more complex, and forage operations will probably become necessary. Any property taken should be supported by a receipt for the value taken to the owner and a copy to the Committee of Safety. Like Washington, we don't want to go steal from the people. If we have to take it, if we have to commandeer it, it should be totally recognized as to what the value is, and that we have taken it for the benefit of the constitutional forces, and compensation will come when it can. That's good faith with the people. Now, we're not going to be going out and getting, when I say forage, we're not going to be going out and getting feed for the horses. We're not going to be going out and stealing food out of their shed. The world's a different place. But if you've got a militia of even, say, 1,000 people, and you have to feed them, you go down to a grocery warehouse and go in and say, we need these supplies. Give them to us. We'll give you a receipt. And that receipt then will assure that they'll be compensated later. So you have to feed the troops. It kind of reminds me of these stories back from the night. Well, let me get this last paragraph, and then I'm going to go into the logistics of supplying an army. Operations and objectives will become much more significant and difficult. This is still the militia. These, however, are a consequence of the success of the militia units in earlier operations. Compensation for services and more extensive medical facilities will assure a healthier, happier, and more capable military. That means field hospitals now. It's not run the guy 20 miles to the hospital. You start needing to have good field facilities necessary if there's an anticipation of battle. Okay, back to the story. Back in the 90s, and I saw it come out a year or so ago, 6 million, in fact, more recently it was Iraq troops, but 6 million Russian soldiers poised to attack the United States just on the other side of the Mexican border. Now, just think a minute how much food it takes to support 6 million soldiers.
It's a lot of food.
All massed together on the other side of the border in Mexico, where they don't even have a large town. So you got all the food. Oh, 50, 60 airplanes a day bringing food. Then you've got to have water draining the Rio Grande. And then you've got to have facilities to get rid of waste. Imagine how big a pile of feces would be from 6 million people taking a dump every day. But logistics is a rather interesting thing. A lot of toilet paper, too, because years ago some people asked me to come up with a plan for a hideaway in Colorado. They were going to come up with the building and everything. Now it fell apart. But they wanted me to set up and manage this thing, and it was going to support 60 people. So I started, and they wanted 3 years. So I started sitting down and figuring, and I said, we need a lot of storage for toilet paper. It's a lot of supplies. That's 60 people 3 years, but imagine 6 million people for one day. That's far more than 60 people for 3 years. So logistics becomes very important. We've got to make sure the militia is healthier, happier, and more capable. Judicial duties. Coordination of formal judiciary consistent with the common law, the intent of both grand and petit juries, and to provide restitution to victims of criminal activities is to be the objective at this level. Now, for those of you, we had a little link problem earlier. If you go to that library, you'll find some articles from the early 1800s that deal with both grand and petit juries so that you understand what to operate like. Not the way they operate now, but the way they're supposed to operate. Matters of loyalty will be brought before the court, requiring coordination with juries around the country to assure that standards in dealing with those inimical to the Constitution, spies, traitors, and other political enemies are properly dealt with, utilizing fair and equitable standards. So within a state, for example, you want to make sure that you're applying the same set of standards to these bad guys. And if you decide on imprisonment, you find a local prison, take the victimless, kind people, let them out, talk to the other people. If they don't feel, you don't feel they're a threat to the community, let them out. And those that are a threat to the community, leave them in and throw these guys in with them. Give them an education over what their government does to people. Anyway, that concludes part four, so we're moving right along now. We still have an hour and 15 minutes to go, so we'll move on to five. This is the institution of governmental elements at the county level. Overview. As entire or nearly entire county areas come into the control of the constitutional forces, the necessity of reestablishing necessary government functions. You coughed a minute. Do you want to take a quick break right here before we go into number five? Randy, did you have any comments on number four?
No, I'm good on number four, actually. That one was pretty self-explanatory, and it was pretty clear and simple.
Okay. As entire or nearly entire county areas come into the control of the constitutional forces, the necessity of reestablishing necessary government functions will require participation by all. Now, we had mentioned about taking over the, as necessary. Now we're up at a county level, and that's much more expansive. You've got telephone facility. You got all these things within the county that have to be maintained. What is instituted at this point is anticipated to be final and permanent government within the geographic area. It is to replace the existing structure of government with one intended to provide only the services necessary for the function of the county government. Its purpose is to create a comfortable environment and protection of private property. It is not to be assumed to be legislative beyond that which is absolutely necessary. Once sufficient county committees are created, a state committee of safety should be created. Now, historical perspective. As royal government was displaced, committees of safety began filling the void created by that absence. The Continental Congress had been populated by delegates sent up from either committees of safety or major committees of safety or provincial committees of safety where they had been established. There was no concerted effort by the Crown to subdue such gatherings until too late. By the Third Continental Congress, the Declaration of Independence was approved. Geographically, there was no problem convening the Continental Congress. Today, however, once such endeavor is begun, it would most surely be a target of attack, kidnap, or assassination. So we've lost the means to do what they did when they went to Philadelphia. We have to find the means for these larger groups to communicate and coordinate with each other, and I'm sure that we will have no problem overcoming that. Okay, role of the committees. County committees of safety will be required to merge themselves into a permanent role of county government. They will have to determine which agencies within the government are to be retained, consistent with the Constitution, what personnel within the existing government are to be retained after taking a loyalty oath to both the United States and the state constitutions. The still surplus county property, if necessary, can provide funds for necessary operations and compensation to the militia people. The committee shall establish a procedure to provide for elections of the county supervisors or equivalent without regard to political parties. The committee, those members who are not elected to official county positions, are to remain as an advisory committee to the county government until such time as they are released from that responsibility by the State Committee of Safety or reconstituted state government. Militia supervision and control will transfer to the State Committee of Safety once it is formed. Judicial functions will transfer to the reconstituted county government. Property taxes and sales taxes collected will be held in the coffers of the committee to be used to continue services and to provide for other needs of the activities of the committee and the constitutional forces. Taxes will be brought into compliance with the Constitution and by the de jure government once the state has been secured. In the interim, the existing tax rates and collections will apply. No property will be seized for failure to pay taxes, nor will any liens issue or penalties apply. Now understand, very early on, if you read the end of the Revolution, beginning of Independence, some of the counties in western Massachusetts went to the county leaders and said, okay, all the taxes you collect for licenses, fees, or anything right now will not go to Boston. It will stay here for us. And it did. And we're doing the same thing. In initiating the State Committee of Safety, until such time as it is geographically practical, will have to be accomplished by whatever means of communication that are available with due consideration for the safety of the delegates. This will largely depend on the degree of cooperation by existing state agencies. If the liaison committee has done well, it can be expected that large portions of the state agencies, including law enforcement, will have taken the loyalty oath and will work towards restoration of constitutional government. Those found to be inimical shall be dealt with as determined by the committee, preferring parole on their honor to incarceration. Again, we want to show that we're good guys. Public relations. Public relations will have accomplished their task for the most part once the county government has been reinstituted. Their energy can now be directed at assisting other counties, providing communications networks, especially of newsworthy activity to other correspondents, meaning other areas, other committees, other states. They will continue to oversee local media to ensure that the information is being disseminated and is accurate and consistent with any policies adopted by the committee. Militia duties. Militia reassignment to the state command will remove them from subordination to their respective committees. They will be considered a part of the state militia, though they may retain their local identity and officers, absent any state militia decision to the contrary. Effectively, they will have transitioned from militia to a state army. Judicial duties. Judicial function will include reviewing local judicial facilities and personnel to determine what is to be used and which personnel not inimical to the Constitution should be retained as members of the county judiciaries. Operations of both criminal and civil courts can be convened as soon as the committee judiciary is satisfied that it can operate in a constitutional manner, including judging both fact and law by the jury. In civil matters regarding loans, mortgages, they should be continued pending a national determination of currency values and other matters regarding the substance of loans.
Hey, Gary.
This will be addressed at the national level in Part 10. What?
Hey, Gary, we got a question from the chat room real quick.
Sure.
Can we expect state government to accept militia recognition? Now, there's two parts to that. One is the beginning part, and one is, like, we're at the part where you're speaking about now. At this part, the state is the county is the people at this point.
Right.
So the recognition from the militia would be from the people, from the committees of safety in that area. That's all the recognition
right.
they need. Now, in the beginning.
Right. Go ahead.
I was going to say, in the beginning, though, it's like everything else. They don't have to recognize anything. They're the government. It's whether we, the people, recognize them. It's whether your community recognizes the militia as being valid. That comes from that PR that we keep talking about. So I hope that answers your question there.
Let's look at it from the other side, though. Let's say that you're the state government. I'm in California, so you're sitting in Sacramento, and Arnie's up there saying, well, hey, this is no problem. This is just a little... These are violent criminals. Whatever they're doing, it's going to be over with in no time. And then a week later, more of these little violent elements are developing around there. And, well, don't worry. Give us time. We'll take care of it. We're just having a little logistical problem here. Well, a couple weeks later, as cities start getting incorporated in those white globs growing rapidly. Well, no, we're going to put down the problem. We're just trying to get them all in one area so we can clamp down on them. And then all of a sudden, we've got counties being taken over, large portions of counties, and then county governments being re-established by the committees of safety. And Schwarzenegger is going to say, well, it won't take long now. We're going to deal with it. We're going to deal with it. But at the same time, we're losing police. We're losing sheriffs. We're losing National Guard. We're losing equipment. We're losing supplies. We're losing control. Now, what are they going to do at that point? They see this thing creeping up on them. And they're going to keep trying to excuse what's happening. But the whole idea of this plan is to expand persistently, consistently, keep going and growing and going and growing, putting the fear of God and the people and the government with a minimum amount of bloodshed. Now, somewhere along the time, a line, and it might be until Sacramento County in California is the only county left that hasn't come under a committee of safety. And they're trapped in Sacramento. They've got all kinds of artillery and everything protecting the perimeter. They're the last holdout in the state. Hey, seize them. Just sit there. Wait, they're not going to break out. They don't have the means. Eventually, they'll throw up their hands and say, oh, what do you want? That's the idea of this plan, to avoid confrontation as much as possible. They'll only get involved in face-on confrontations if absolutely necessary. It will be necessary in some cases. If you've taken over a county and you've got a police department or sheriff's department holding out, you might have to use force to dislodge them and take over the rest of the county and secure it so that you can provide the services for the community. But by constantly growing like this, we're going to be doing what they did over the last 80 years, but we're going to be doing it a little quicker, hopefully. That we're going to be creeping up on them. And pretty soon it will overwhelm them, especially if we play good guys and get people to abandon the rebel government and come to the committees of safety saying, we're on your side. We want our Constitution back. So that's looking at it from the other side. We're not looking at direct confrontation unless absolutely necessary. We're looking at putting the fear of God and the people in the damn government. And if we're effective at that, they will throw up their hands somewhere along the line. At least I believe they will. And now we can speculate. And boy, believe me, if somebody has a better plan than this, this viable, this workable, I'll be glad to tear this up in public and eat it.
Well, you know, Gary,
we got to start somewhere. What?
You know, Gary, I think if we look back, though, you know, what we're not talking about anything here. This you know, this whole scenario is hypothetical, but this whole hypothetical scenario that you're talking about here is really just a history lesson from the only successful revolution in the history of the world that ever freed a country and kept the people free for even a short period of time.
Right. Now, there's a difference here because
this has already been done. Yeah, this has already been done. This is all, you know.
Go ahead.
I was going to say, you know, these tactics that you talk about, if you look back at what the committees of safety were doing back in the pre-revolutionary days, this is it. You know, there was groups out there who were tar and feathering people, and the committees of safety were, you know, they were not supporting them or endorsing them, but they were saying, look at what you're causing. And they were garnering the public support. You know, a lot of people didn't fight in the Revolutionary War, but a lot of people supported the Revolutionary War. You know, it was that ancillary group that supplied information and supplied food and things like that. You know, that's where a lot of this stuff comes from, you know, all these ideas that you're talking about. So, you know, I just want to put out that this is not something new either. You know, this is coming at from the only, you know, I guess what I'm trying to say is that you use the only basis in history, the only successful basis in history, for, you know, as the basis for your plan.
And the only thing that we've done with this is adapt it to the modern playing field. The playing field is different than it was then, and we have to adapt the tactics that were used by them then and apply them to the playing field we're on now. They had back-and-forth battles. I mean, there was a running battle from New York to Philadelphia and then back to New York. There were the battles in the South that began at Charleston, worked north, and ended up at Yorktown, of all places. So there were running battles then. But see, back then, there were pockets that were isolated from what was happening. A message comes in and says, Tories are winning. Oh, okay. Another one comes in and says, the rebels are winning. Okay. They didn't have the ability to coordinate now. With technology, we know our friends in different states. Do you know more people in any other state in the union than most of them ever knew in their whole lifetime? So we have communication now, and that communication allows us not to be outside of Boston or outside of New York, but it allows us to be everywhere. So we're adapting to this playing field,
right,
and saying, okay, instead of having a big line around New York, we're going to have a bunch of little pockets pop up all over the country.
Well, I know. We had a caller on the line who had their hand raised. Caller, 865. You have a question or a comment?
Hello?
Hello?
Hi.
Hi, did you have a question or a comment?
I do. I have several, actually. One of the last venues that we have left, our very last vote, is what we do with our dollar. And you need to decide who and what companies that you will spend your dollars with. And I cannot stress that anymore to the American public.
Well, I agree. That's part of what we were talking about here as well. The committees of safety, you know, in this hypothetical scenario, can publicly voice opinions and get people to stop doing business with local, with certain businesses and only promote local companies.
Agreed. Are you familiar with the organization Tax Free 15?
Yeah, we actually had them on our, we interview them every month on our show usually.
That's Karen Tostado.
Right. Yeah, I know Karen very well, actually.
Yeah, wonderful lady. That is something that we have got to stress to every person that we meet.
I agree. That local action is what's needed. You know, Karen and I are talking about the exact same things with the committees of safety and, you know, the militia and things like that. We're speaking the same language and we're reading out of the same book when we talk to each other. So, you know, everything that we've been talking about here is pretty much in line with, you know, what Karen Tostado was, you know, calling for people to do on the local level. You know, take back your local government, put the fear of God back into them, remind them that we are here and that they live amongst us.
Agreed. And I know personally where I'm from the state of Tennessee, and one of the greatest ways to engage someone in a conversation, because I have no hesitation to speak to someone while I'm pumping my gas, and the first words I ask them, do you know your share of the national debt? And 9 times out of 10, they have no clue. When you tell them that right now, we're looking at $44,000 per person because you're an American. Blows their mind and makes them think.
I got a question for you, Tennessee. Did you have a question specifically about anything that we've talked about so far as a hypothetical plan on a way to restore our country or ways that we could go about doing it?
No, I'm very new to Blog Talk. It's brand new to me, and this is the very first time that I've heard your show.
Okay, well, listen, I would recommend that you go back and check out the archives. In fact, you'll see that on most of our ads, in fact, you'll see that we have United We Strike on there for Karen and stuff. So, but I would recommend if you have to really go back and listen to the first six episodes in this series. And then go and ask Karen, you know, go talk to Karen or, you know, call up to Karen and talk to her about the committees of safety as well and see what her ideas on them are.
All right. And let me ask you this. What do you think of Schaefer Cox's Liberty Bell project?
I think that's incredible. In fact, I had him on the show a few weeks ago. We were talking about his Liberty Bell system and the militia system he has set up there, the militia network he has set up there. In fact, Schaefer Cox is doing what we're talking about doing on this show. He's already done it. He's doing it right now without even realizing that he's formed committees of safety without them actually existing. He's engaged upon the plans already.
I would agree with you on that from what I've listened to. The second question that I would have for you, are you aware of a website called SNAP, S-N-A-P, Scouts, S-C-O-U-T-S?
Snap Scouts?
Yes.
I have not heard of that. Gary, are you familiar with that?
Not at all.
It is the most terrifying thing that I have ran across, and I ran across it on RBN. I was listening 2 weekends ago and just got a tidbit of what this information was. I have done my own research on it. It is snapscouts.org.
All right, well, thanks for that. Well, listen, we're down to our last 30 minutes, and Gary still has to get into the information that we're going to cover today. But, no, as far as Schaefer Cox goes, go back and listen to that episode that we did with him, and I think you'll be really impressed with a lot of the what he's talking about. I mean, you're obviously aware of him. The system works, so that's my opinion.
Hey, Jeff, can you give me 2 minutes to read what this says? SnapScout, crowd searching crime prevention. And let me describe the page for you. It's houses behind it with a little red car in the front, a little boy with a magnifying glass holding, waving an American flag. Above it, it says, see it, snap it, send it. SnapScout, keeping America safe. Want to earn tons of cool badges and prizes while competing with your friends to see who can be the best American? Download SnapScout for your app, Android phone, iPhone, app coming soon. It's up to you to keep America safe. If you see something suspicious, snap it. If you see somebody that doesn't belong, snap it. If you're unsure of something or someone may be suspicious, snap it. Anyway, play
sounds
with
like
your friends and family.
Sounds like the Nazi youth culture coming back.
There you go. Look it up. Do the research on it. I cannot debunk this. I have tried to debunk this, and it is there. And just, I want you to read some testimonials. This has already been tried out.
This is about a plan that we're discussing, and I appreciate what the work that you've done in researching all this. But it's not appropriate for this show because we have an agenda on this show in trying to get this plan that we're discussing, and I assume you've been listening to it, out as a theoretical plan for the restoration of constitutional government when the ballot box and the jury box have failed us.
It is, but if you don't understand what the left hand is doing underneath what we are trying to set the agenda to put these plans into place, then you were never going to accomplish.
Oh, we get it. We're well beyond
that
point. Most of the people listening to this show, we're well past that. We're now looking for solutions. We understand the problems. We're well into the solution area now.
Well, the solution is that we've got to create.
But thank you for calling in. I do appreciate that. But like I said, we're down to 27 minutes now, and we still have a ton of info to go over for this episode, so we don't tie up next week's episode. Gary, continue on.
Okay, thank you for calling, ma'am. Now, okay, we're talking about judicial duties, and as I said, we'll talk about the, in part 10, which is the last part, we'll be talking about the currency and other matters regarding substance of loans. Now, the reason loans and mortgages need to be put off is there's some valuation questions that are necessarily going to come up as a consequence of this. Our Federal Reserve notes going to be the currency of the realm? Are they going to be valued the way they are? Are we going to have inflation? Are we going to deal with it? And yes, there is a part of this plan that it deals with solving the economic problem too, but you can't do that on the state level. That's a national issue. So it's coming in part 10. So anything regarding loans or mortgages has to be put off until the aspect of value and obligation is addressed on a national level to deal fairly with the situation. Okay, so now both county, if they exist, and state rules of court. Now, rules of court are these voluminous books that tell you when you can file motions, what motions you can file, how much time you have to answer. I have found from personal experience the government is not bound by the same rules as you and me. If you and I have 30 days to respond to a motion, for example, the government, the state, the county, the state, or the federal government can take 3 or 4 months to respond, and the court will leave open where that door could have been shut. The rules of the court deny justice. Juries provide justice by ruling on both law and fact. And so the rules of the court need to be abandoned, thrown out, especially if you've ever read them and realized that the term paper chase is appropriate because just as a side, paper chasing is what the game is. And he who chases paper best prevails. And so they need to be abandoned because they are inconsistent with justice. Any new rules of court to be established should be structured upon fairness to all parties, should not preclude any evidence which either party deems pertinent, and should never allow testimony in exchange for any benefit, favor, or other consideration. Now, understand what that says. The government decides their evidence is good and your evidence is bad, and the court goes with them. So your evidence doesn't go in and theirs does, even if it's falsified. And they will promise people, and I was involved as a witness in a trial in Tampa, Florida, where a guy who was a felon should not have sat on the federal jury, was given they suspended his whole sentence, Bentley's community service and time on parole, because he sat on a jury against the Florida Tampa law, common law trial. So to get a prisoner, hey, you want to get out of prison early? You testify against this guy? The government uses that. You can't. You can't get a witness to come out and, hey, I'm going to get you out of jail if you testify on my side, but the government can. Those favors, those benefits, those considerations need to be wiped out because with them there is no justice. So as this judicial committee expands, it needs to address the way the law used to apply when they were courts of justice, not courts of law. The law belongs to the government. Justice belongs to the people. Existing statutes will be abandoned in favor of evaluating injury received in criminal matters and breach of contract and civil matters until such time as the state legislature is prepared to operate in accordance with the Constitution and restrict police powers to only that which is absolutely necessary to the function of the state. Grand juries for criminal matters will be instituted without supervision except by the jury foreman, because they're all controlled now by a government attorney. He just says what goes in and what goes out and who can speak before it. So it goes back to the original concept. Go to outpostoffreedom.com/library. There's a very good article on grand jury. You read that and you'll find out the grand juries turn against government as often as they turn against people. Not anymore, but we need to get back to that. No law enforcement or legal professionals are to be included in either grand or petite juries. They are to be considered third party to any proceeding. So we're getting law enforcement and legal professionals, lawyers, out of the grand juries and out of the petite juries. They are third party to any proceeding. Right now, they pretty much control it. Now, that's all for... what was it? Part five. probably good stopping point. We'll just, I don't know, can we get through another one? What do you think? Should we go on?
We have
about... Or is there something worth discussing here?
Well, you know what, I think we should hold off right now. Let's stop here and let's actually start looking at some of the ideas that we've covered. I've got some questions about some of the things that you've discussed and some topics that I'd like to bring up as well. First off, I'd like to go back to the beginning of this all. You know, in the very beginning, as tyranny is possibly beginning to rise its head, is when a society really needs to look at what's going on and start determining and making plans for in case. Many countries have fallen because the people have not been able to stand their ground or defend themselves. So, when is that time? Well, I say that time is any time the government, like Joe said, starts exerting itself in unconstitutional or illegal manners, when they begin infringing upon the people, taking what is theirs, or taking away what was never theirs to give in the first place.
Well, let me ask you a question then, Randy. What's a quorum for that determination?
The quorum for that determination, I think, needs to be established within each community in each state, at the most local level possible.
Within a security team or a leaderless resistance cell, yes. Because if we wait to determine what a quorum is, we've got so many new people coming into the Patriot community all the time that if we say a quorum is just 2% of the Patriot community, first, how do you count them? Second, how do you take a vote? And by the time you figure that out, if you had enough more come in, that haven't caught up that you will never have your quorum, no matter how small it is. So what we have to understand, this is the most important thing. If we wait for it to come together and say it's time, let's find another collective group that's found its time and try and get five groups so we can all start at once, we've shot ourselves in in Germany, there were people that were striking out, but very small cells. We need to understand that if we see these things start happening, in some people's mind, the time has come, and maybe it's time for us to begin thinking, maybe the time's come for me too. Because if it's starting, I'm going to have to decide which side of the fence I want to be on. So activity beginning in small groups, isolated, where oppression is greater or where the possibility of success is greater, as they start out, they become the beginning force. You've got to offer them support, at least morally, to encourage them. You can't call them bad names because they've begun doing this, because it has to start somewhere. And if we discourage that starting, if we damn those who start out, go out and start acting in accordance with the plan, what we are doing is saying, no, we don't want the Constitution back. We will stop the effort to restore the Constitution. That's what you, as alleged constitutionalists, will be doing. You will be stopping the progression of a plan that can restore the Constitution at its inception, at its birth. You will be saying, no, we don't want our Constitution back. So you have to understand when it starts, you cannot condemn it. You cannot damn it. If you don't like it, just keep your mouth shut. If you like it, speak highly of it. You take any other position, and you are not a constitutionalist, because you will do everything that you can to keep it from happening. So when those small units begin, they deserve your support, or if nothing else, they deserve your silence. Okay?
Okay.
Ready.
No, I agree with Dave. And we were just talking in here, though, in the chat room, in fact, there's a lot of comments being made in there, you know, about where it starts and how it begins. And somebody was saying, you know, it can't start with just, you know, 19 people isn't going to make that difference. And I was commenting that 19 people aren't going to make that difference on a national level. Those 19 people in a county bringing in more people and working on public support, that's when we begin to make a difference.
Well, if you're talking about a committee of safety of 19 people, understand that in their capacity as a committee of safety, they can't do anything.
No.
They have to step out of that capacity if they're going to do anything. I would say that more than likely,
no, 19 people of anything in a security team, in a militia, in a committee of safety, 19 people all actively working every day. That's a good start, though. That's where we can start somewhere.
It is, but when you go out to do something, you should be 3, 5, 7, 9 people, a small group like a security team. Read Leaderless Resistance in our security team. The links, I put up before. Randy and I will get a set of links up on UF Tread on Me page pretty soon so that you can go back and review these articles. But you want to start out with a small group of people that you've known for a long time, because the potential for infiltration is great. So 19 people is an extremely large organization. I would put that in part two rather than part one of this program. That's when you start coming together as groups. Find 5 or 6 people that you've known for a long time, that you trust, that haven't been recently charged with a crime and walked, that you would trust your life with, because you will be doing that. And that is the unit that will start this. It could be as little as 3 people, 2 people. Now, if they have a civilian counterpart of, say, older people, Vietnam veterans that they work with, and in the new rewrite, in fact, maybe I should cover that. I added a portion to the plan that Randy hasn't seen yet at the beginning because somebody raised a question about it. So let me read it. This plan, after years of discussion and contemplation, coupled with an understanding of what the founders did to challenge the authority of the power of government, was developed as a guideline that would answer the question of whether it would be possible today to emulate the action of those founders to achieve the same end. Though the desire to change government back to its constitutional limitations would best be served if no blood were shed, the impracticality of achieving that end, along with the knowledge that blood has already been shed, moves us to the second position, that the minimum amount of blood be shed, and that of the blood that is to be shed, that it involved the absolute minimum of innocent blood. Though accident, error, and perhaps judging wrongly the actions of those who might be targeted, it is far better to isolate these errors to people who, if not guilty, at least are in a position and have acted in such a manner that their guilt was probable. There is also the moral consideration that those who are willing to strike, as the founders did, do so in violation of the laws as they exist today. When they make a decision to target someone or something, they should consider just how that target will be construed by those who will eventually make judgment on their actions. Most importantly would be the judgment made by God and the person doing the act. If the act is motivated for the purpose of revenge, God will judge and the person will have to live with that the rest of his life. On the other hand, if the act is one that is surely one of retribution for acts of the target, whether corporate, property, or an individual life, it is clearly demonstrated by a pattern on the part of that person or entity, then surely God will judge as necessary and the actor will have a clear mind. Where possible, all players in the act, and even more desirable, others who can safely be associated with them and brought into, if not the plan, at least the determination of the validity of the targets, the collective judgment serving as a sort of a jury concerning both the guilt and demonstrable necessity of the action will provide the best assurance of a desirable final judgment and a clear conscience for those involved. If blood is to be shed, every consideration should be made that the blood deserves to be shed. Some considerations for the evaluation of a target. Have lives been lost as direct or indirect result of the actions of the target, acting in violation of the Constitution or constitutional laws of the land? Has there been a continual loss of property by people who should have had that property protected under the Constitution or constitutional laws? If a foreign nation, say Russia, were to invade the United States, would the target become a collaborator, turning against the United States and the Constitution? Note, the possibility that if there were sufficient friends or collaborators of a foreign power, those friends might encourage participation by that foreign power is to be considered. The discouragement of this sort of person would be as desirable as the discouragement of all the other potential targets. Now, what that means is, let's just take an organization like SEIU. I mean, these people would be in sympathy with Russia if Russia were to attack the United States. I honestly believe they would, because they want to be communists. They want to be taken care of by mother country. They don't want to have to work for a living.
No,
so would they be collaborators if Russia invaded the United States?
Yes, they would.
Well, if they would, then if they were in a position to invite the Russia over here to the United States, let's say they got elected president or something. God forbid that a communist or a socialist ever get elected president. But if they did, would they invite the Russians over? So these people are targets by their very nature. If they would be collaborators with the enemy, like the French that supported the Germans, they are targets. They are a threat to the restoration of the constitutional government of this country.
Exactly.
So that was added on there to be a little more conscientious in the determination of targets before you proceed.
Well, exactly. We have to keep that in mind. I mean, that public support that we keep mentioning, that any, you know, that any free people that are standing up to tyranny would want to recruit, you know, from the people that might not be combatants or anything, but those support lines there, the government is going to, you know, those illegal factions are going to be doing the same thing. They will have their, you know, citizen support groups and networks and information lines, and that'll be those people that support them. You know, just like you mentioned, the French, you know, in Vichy, France, who supported Hitler and wanted that government in there. They would be threats.
If they didn't exist, they wouldn't have supported the Germans. And if they cease to exist now, they would not support the Russians in the scenario we just project. But see, this is small groups. How many does it take to go out and blow up a facility or give somebody lead poisoning in the middle of the night? You don't need 19 people. 19 people is burdensome. If you all are in sympathy with each other and you trust everybody, that 19 people can be the collective group that makes the determination, acts in the capacity of jury. But they are acting outside of the law. Understand that. And I'd like to think the committees and militia would protect them unless there were presentment or indictment by a grand jury made up of the people, not made up, headed by the government.
Well,
they make the determination and pick the two or three guys that are going to be the team, that's fine. But we're talking about not being able to go dump the tea in the harbor, singing songs, and then walk away without people coming down on us. We're not talking about throwing a tax collector in a car, tarring and feathering him, slapping signs on him, taking him out in the snow, giving him pneumonia and severe burns over most of his body where he subsequently dies, and walking away and not having the police step in and arrest you for carting him through the streets. We're in a different playing field. So we have to use covert activity rather than the overt activity that the Founding Fathers used.
Well, exactly. And, in fact, if we look back to the Polish, to the Polish and the Jewish ghettos in the German-controlled lands in Europe, we find that they were engaging in these very same things, and they weren't using large groups. In fact, 19 people would have been too many people. They were 2-, 3-, 4-man teams, 5-man teams sometimes. But they kept the number small so they could move and keep everything silent and secret. And that's how they were
got larger as time went on, and we're taking that model as well, because when they went to blow up a whole factory or a train facility, they need people at all corners. So they could have 20 or 30 people. These groups come together when necessary,
when the
target warrants it. Then they go back to their individual cells as necessary.
You know, that's what I think that, you know, this whole fictitious scenario that we're talking about is envisioning, you know, is a new Hitler, a new Stalin rising up within, you know, or appearing to rise up within the country, you know, a new Pol Pot, you know.
If some pastor takes over as leader of the country, we might want feel it's time to act.
Yeah, you know, I mean, what happens, you know, like you mentioned one day, you know, what happens if a communist, you know, comes in and says there is no more constitution and burns it on national TV? What do? I guess it's time to stand up.
What if they take God, the Creator out of the Declaration of Independence and God out of the Gettysburg Address? Oops, too late for that. I don't know if you've been keeping up with the news, but Obama apparently twice now has, we are endowed with certain unalienable rights, among those life, liberty, and pursuit of happiness. What's missing?
Property?
No, endowed by our Creator.
Oh, by our Creator, yes.
That omission twice now. And apparently there's a publication out regarding Gettysburg Address that left God out.
Really?
So,
well, we don't
I'm not saying the time has come.
Well,
I'm saying it's passed. It's time. The time has come for some teams to get together and go out and do their patriotic duty. If I were 20 years younger, if I were 45, 5 years older than Randy, I would be out in the field right now. I'm too old, but I will do what I can to help anybody achieve beginning the process of restoring the Constitution. And we can hide people, believe me. We've done it before. So if you're...
You know, the question needs to be asked, though. You know, I tend to take the more Jeffersonian, libertarian role in a lot of things. You know, and call me crazy, call me paranoid on both sides. You know, I believe that tyranny can rise up within the group that is trying to do good as well. You know, so, you know,
Part three, everything comes under the committees of safety so that the tyranny cannot rise up. Before it gets large enough to be a warlord operation, the committees and the militia are there to protect the community, ensure that those things don't happen. Now we're working back like the founders, having a government in place.
Yep.
To assure that those elements can't become massive private armies to gain control of the country. Not that I believe that it would happen, but the reason we know it won't happen is because it didn't happen 230 years ago. There was a smooth transition of government. Most parts of the country never went without government. From April 19, 1775 to 1781, Articles of Confederation. They never went without government.
Actually, I've got a question for you. When you were saying that Obama made those or omitted the creator reference or the God reference in the Gettysburg and in the Constitution, when was that? I don't watch the news. So I don't watch the news anymore.
In the last few days. Now, I've seen it in news articles. WorldNet Daily has some. If you're familiar with WorldNet Daily, and
I imagine it's
the type of article they'll have up tomorrow as well, but let me go there right now and see if they have it. Anybody on the chat familiar with those?
Most people should be familiar with them. They read them pretty regularly. I mean, WorldNet Daily is pretty known out there. But it's... For those that don't know, I believe it's www.wnd.com or worldnetdaily.com.
WND or WorldNet Daily. Either one will get you there.
Yep.
And looking right now for that article, I don't see it yet.
Oh, we got one in there from cnsnews.com.
Somebody found one?
Yeah, there was one in there from cnsnews.com. Yeah. I stopped watching TV many years ago, so I haven't really watched TVs since 88, I believe. Now I watch it even less than I did before, which is almost no TV now. So, no, it's just good to know what stories are out there that should be interesting.
I watch the news just to find out what's happening, and if I see something worth pursuing, then I go out to the internet and try and find out what's really happening. So it's just kind of it says, look, here's something here, but don't believe what we're telling you.
Yeah. No, I agree. I'm not really big on the whole revisionist thing. I believe you're going to quote something, you quote it in full context. You don't quote sections of it. You quote it in full context. You don't omit things because you don't like them. You state the truth about any given subject, and you give a full statement. So, yeah, well, I'd like to see how the whole revisionism is going along now. You know, they said that religion is one of the... Where are we at in our time? We are down to about 4 minutes, I believe. 2 minutes.
Yeah. So, but we do have confirmation on the creator being left out of the Declaration. And
we got several of them. Daily Caller, WesternJournalism.com, DailyCaller.com, CNSNews.com.
Apparently there were two times now that he's done that. From what I've read. Now, there's another one, though, where something about Gettysburg Address, where God was left out. So somebody finds that one and posts it. But, you know, this is what's happening in this country. Our heritage is being destroyed in front of us. It's being destroyed piecemeal in front of us. We need to begin regaining it back piecemeal in front of them and turn the tables and start that slow progression. Now, how long will this take? It could take 20 years. It could be over in 3 years. It just depends on how well we play our parts. It's very possible that this could grow at such a rapid rate that they flee the country before we even get close to Washington, D.C., and we will get into the new legislatures when we get to parts 9 and 10. I mean, this is thought out all the way to somebody stepping into the White House again, representing the people of the country, not the power. So we're running out of time. Those that you've listened in, if you do like what you're hearing, bring some friends, come back next week, and we'll continue on with the next part of Time for a Plan.
Also, this Sunday, we missed our last Sunday and our Militia Monday show. This upcoming Sunday, we're going to be doing the Bug Out Show on the Survival Sunday show, and we're going to be looking at all aspects of bugging out, psychological, material, and supplies. Monday, we're also going to be having an interview with Layton. He's a friend of mine. His specialty in the military was command and control. We're going to be discussing command and control tactics as they apply to the military and how they'll be used against, how the militia and other groups and organizations out there can safeguard against tactics like that. So that'll be a great show as well. So that'll be the same time, same place, 7:30 Mountain Standard Time. Thank you, everyone, for listening. And please help spread the word. If you like this show, tell other people about it. Get them listening. Get other people thinking. Get them, and more importantly, get them acting. 2 hours a day. You know, if you 2 hours a day. You got to get out there and put in the work at least 2 hours a day. Not internet time, not TV time, just actually out doing the work. So everybody take care. Have a good one. Be safe. Bye-bye.
Good night.